Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Bobblehead Podcast. It's been some time since we've done one of these, so we're going to try to remember how we do it. So David and I today really kind of catch up a lot on what's been going on since last time we did a podcast. But we also have some really cool discussions about not only what's been going on in our lives, but some things that we've learned. So the kind of topic today is what have we learned since last time we did one of these? And it's kind of cool. It's fun to hear the stories behind what we've learned. And there's always a reason why, but I think you're going to get a lot out of it. So welcome back and thanks for listening.
Dude, it's almost like this takes away like the original banter because we are able to see like this countdown and it makes it feel so incredibly serious.
Like, it does. I just got through doing a video for Vicki Wallace. So asked Jamie and I to do a video for her and you know me, I'm like, sure. Great. And so this will be very telling of me to you. Like you, I'm going to say this, you're going to go, oh, I 100% get it. Like, I'm like, what? So what do you want me to say? And he goes, just say whatever you want. I'm like, okay, I can do that. So he puts a mic on, gets out in the front yard. And so he goes, you know, he's behind the camera and he's like, go. And so I go on for, you know, 30, 40 seconds. And he stops me and he's like, okay, great. But can you talk about this? I'm like, wait a minute. Like, I thought I was going to just talk about whatever. And he goes, yeah, but there's, you know, some of the key points that, you know, she's trying to get across or, you know, some of what it was important to you. And I'm kind of like, well, that's kind of what I just did. But, and he's like, so if you will do this and this and this. So how well do you think I handled that?
Not well at all.
13 takes later.
Yeah. Like that's how I started shaking my head. I'm like, oh dude, that guy got you all wrong.
13 takes later. And it's not a complex thing what he's asking me to say. And he's basically what to say what I want. He's basically taking what I told him and kind of making it in order.
Yeah.
Make it more clear. And I didn't say it, but it's like, dude, that's not
it's
how
not
I
my brain, dude.
Like that's not my brain, you know. And Jamie was so nervous about it. And she gets out there and he says, you know, if you'll talk about these things or, you know, what's important to you. And so she tells him and he's like, good, we'll just say it in this order. And she just knocks it out one take.
Yeah.
And she was the one that didn't really want to do it. And I was really looking forward to it. And I'm the one that's wind up screwing the whole thing up. So he looks at me and he goes, I can edit it out. It's okay. I'll just edit it and make it look good.
You're like, you don't know who I am.
Like, and I'm like,
I'm number 13 podcaster in the world.
Number 13 of the worst 1 million.
According to antiquated metrics, we were like the number 13 podcast in the world.
They were bought and paid for metrics. Yeah, for sure.
You know what's funny is I learned from you over time to be less scripted. And now I've adapted to where whether it's a speech or whether it's a any kind of thing, I do better with just a couple of bullet points in my brain and then let my experience and like my passion for the subject be the guide of what it is that I'm going to say. Like I found out early on, like if I tried to write a speech and like the speech was like, I would write pages of what the speech was going to be.
Oh,
and the problem is when you do that is you're inevitably going to forget part of the script, right? You're going to forget a thing that you were going to say. And if you're so used to just reading from it, that one hiccup just destroys what it was you were going to say.
It does. It does. And you're worried about, and you're so worried about remembering it that you never really feel it when you say it, right?
Yeah.
And so 100%
agree.
It originally came from your heart because you wrote it, but it never sounds the same the second time.
It becomes rote memorization.
It does. It does. Yeah. And it's, you know, it reminded me of, you were telling me about that kind of speech you gave a month or two ago. You found out like 5 minutes ahead of time that you had to give it. Right. Wasn't that the case? Something like that?
Yeah.
And so you pull something
up. You're going to talk about change management. I'm like, what? Okay.
Yeah. And you pull something up that, you know, and because you're really good at knowing, okay, change management, I can talk about this and this and this. But you're really good now of going, okay, great, I got this. And talking for 30, 45 minutes and giving very detailed things about it. Right. So you're very good at it as long as it's something that you are comfortable with or not comfortable with. It's something you know.
I'm good at it as long as it's something I'm good at. Like, put that on a T-shirt. I feel, I don't know, so if we're taking
I'm
like
100%
bobblehead, bobblehead podcast marketing ideas, I'm really good at the things that I'm good at.
I'm I'm awesome at what I'm good at. Yeah, I like that.
Oh, that really but good. But you're right though. Like genuinely just learning to flow. And yeah, when you said he told you say this and this and this, like it's done. Oh, I'm surprised you didn't just drop the mic and walk away.
Oh, it just yeah. And part of it but is you know what, don't tell me what to do, right?
This is one of the many phases of Tim Elliott in retirement is you are now a civil activist, dare I say.
Is that what you call it? Helping somebody with their campaign, a civil activist?
I don't know. I mean,
what did you call me? What did you call me that first, like after that night you were over here? You called me a
community influencer.
Community influencer. Let me just be real factual about something and real clear about something. I influence no one. And if I do influence them, it's usually for something negative. Like whatever it is, I'm not going to do what that guy does.
Yeah. But it was cool. And again, I know we're in the kind of the catch up process now, but it was cool seeing you in your element in your home and, you know, hosting people that some you knew, some you didn't know, but you know, yeah. Talking about it, something you were passionate about. Again, like it's always cool to see your friends do the things that they're passionate about doing.
Yeah, it was fun. It was kind of cool. And it's also kind of cool that we're in the last stage of, like, I realize now, like, okay, I'm older. And that's one of the reasons they're asking me to do this, right?
Yeah, I would agree
so
with that.
It's kind of weird, kind of strange. So let me just jump into the elephant in the room. And that is, we haven't done one of these in like months. So there may be like two people left that even know what Bobblehead podcasts are. However, I turned two people onto it today.
Okay.
And we'll see if they actually listen or not. But they followed the podcast. So maybe it'll download and maybe we'll get credit for it, even if they never listen. Guy was from Toronto. Yeah. Kind of cool.
Just met him in randomly at 5013 Coffee or like where'd you meet?
No, I actually met him downtown I hate to even say this on here, but you know who Tom Brown is? Like the designer?
No.
You'll have to look it up.
Okay.
So anyway, I'll have to tell you outside the podcast what I got, but I'll just say this, a new suit.
Okay.
But very different. So I'll have to tell you about it. Like one that you're going to laugh and I don't really, there'll be a point in time we talk about on the podcast, but I want you to see it first, see it on me. And then I want you to be able to get the full, like the full on.
So here's the cool thing about doing this remote is like, I can pull this up in real time and I can look and for the people that are listening to this, you know, Tim's new friend from Toronto being probably the prime audience. It is not Tom like T-O-M. It is Tom with a silent H, right?
It is. Yes, it is. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, exactly. You know, yeah.
Just to make sure that we're level setting on it. And I'm the photos are making me more intrigued by the moment of
I'm going to send you
the stock photos.
Is your phone handy?
Oh, of course.
Okay, I'm going to send remote. You.
You can't tell me what to do.
Okay, so I'm going to send you a picture, and you can't say anything. I'm just going to wait and just hear you laugh when you see it, of what I did today, and what I ordered today, because it's quite interesting. Dang it! Hang on.
And as you're doing that, keep, like if you can multitask, keep telling the story about the guy that you met from Toronto. What's this guy's name, so we can talk about him as though he's not an abstract concept.
I'll get to that. I'll get to that.
Okay.
I'm going to butcher his name because it's not just a normal name that you and I. It's Zaid, Z-A-I-D. I believe that's how you pronounce it. Is his first name. Really cool dude. Dresses. You would love the way he dressed. Like he. To the T. You can imagine, right? This is what he does, right? So anyway, so I sent you a picture. You can't say anything. I just want to hear you.
Oh, mom you is the word.
At it. I want you to look at it and give me your first impression. It's on your phone. It's on your phone, right?
No, I saw it already. And you, I steeled my resolve for this thing because like I didn't think you wanted me to have a reaction to it. Because of course my brain is full of a billion things.
I want full reaction.
I'm not surprised, first and foremost. I would have been surprised a couple years ago. I'd have been surprised. But now, like, I think I know where you're going with this. I think it ties to one of the ventures possibly that you're working on?
It does, but it actually doesn't.
Okay. So, but I can't say what it is, right? Am I not allowed to say what it is?
No, you can't say what it is.
Okay. Think
about this with a tux top and a bow tie.
Okay. But the concept, not the color or the pattern, of course.
No, right? Correct. Like, yeah. Concept. Okay. Only concept. Yeah.
And I mean, this can't just be for a casual event. Like it's got to be for a thing.
Full on. So I've done more black tie stuff in the last 4 months than I've done in the last 5 years. Right. And so it's in place of that. Like, it's one of those things where Jamie has all these beautiful dresses and really different stuff. Mm-hmm. And I go and I look like everybody else there. So I want something different.
I like it, man. Different. I really do. And so, again, I won't spoil what it is.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, as long as I don't see the working end, like I think I'll be okay. As long as I just see, as long as I see the casual end of things, then I think we'll probably come out of it still being able to make eye contact with each other.
Yeah, what's meant to be said.
We'll come out still being able to hug and make eye contact.
Yes, yeah, that will be awkward. So we haven't done one of these in a while, and one of the reasons is it's hard to track you down because you're super busy. I'm a little bit easier to deal with, and Sophie is very pregnant. And for her to drive all the way out here to Heath and then get you wrangled, it's hard to get the days together. So we found an application that allows us to do this remotely for a couple of reasons. Number one, easy for all of us to get together. So if you're listening to this and it sounds even a little bit different, it's because we're not doing it on a soundboard like we used to. We're doing it virtually. And then Sophie's going to takes all of it and puts all the channels together and makes it sound good. But also, one of the things that we wanted to accomplish with this is we want to have guests on. So I've already lined up four people that are going to do this. So that's the next step. Is we're going to record a couple, several, just you and me, and then we're going to start setting the microphones out and recording these. So I think Chris will probably be the first one if we can
I was going to ask if you were going to announce the lineup or not. But
Chris is going to be one of the first ones, and that will be. And I've also thought about, do we want to keep chopping these up, or do we want to do some longer form? And Sophie, it'll be up to you, but I want to think about maybe on some of these doing a longer form, especially with Chris. My friend Israel Lewis shout out Israel, is going to be on this, do one. And I've got two other people lined up. So anyway, so that's what we've been doing. That's what we've been trying to put together. And so anyway, hope it works out.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Again, I know we've talked about this a couple of times, but having Chris on the podcast, like in a different forum, one of the, if not the smartest man I've ever met in my life, like objectively, just super intelligent person. But you meet Chris's type and they're hard to interact with as normal people. It's because they like see the matrix. They don't see us as people. Yeah. They see us as like, ones and zeros.
Yeah.
But Chris is unique in that he is very personable.
Yeah.
And you can have a conversation with him about wine or, healthcare IT market or the capital markets or whatever, and have an engaging conversation with him. So like, I feel bad for us, quite frankly, and like trying to match intellect with him on any level in any subject, but you know what? What are you going to do?
And that's why we're going to come at him from both sides. And so we'll keep him confused so that, with my idiotic, old sayings and quips
I'm confused by your tactics.
Right angles. That maybe we'll keep him confused enough where,
right. That's Talladega Nights, right? I'm confused by your tactics.
I'm confused by your tactics. That's, I still use that, by the way, quite a bit.
I know you used it on me one time at the,
mainly to Jamie. Yeah.
Well, it's because I'm not the predominant influence in your life anymore. Once August 12th rolled around, then, for good, bad or indifferent got you back.
Yeah. She did.
I don't know whether to apologize or say you're welcome. Depends on the day.
I'll let you know.
On the day. Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of smart things, one of the things I thought it'd be fun to cover today, since we haven't done this in a while, is what have you learned new since we talk? Not since we talk. We talk all the time on Fridays. We try to get together for coffee. But what new thing or new thought have you had since last time we did podcast?
it's such an interesting question because, you know, I feel there's times where I feel like I'm just like white knuckling life right now, you know, with like 12 puppies and white knuckling four life. Kids and, you know,
I mean, it's not just, you are white knuckling life.
And everything going on. Okay. So like with the puppies, and I don't think we've talked about this, but you know, we have 12, I don't think have we talked about this on the podcast? You know, we have a litter of 12 puppies on the ground.
I don't think we have. It's been so long. Yeah. I think the puppies have been born since we did the last one.
Yes. In November. And it's been such a wild ride, but you know, like I learned, like it was like being a new parent again, like that immense feeling of responsibility that you have over the lives of other things. And life gets really simple, but really hard. And the thing that it's made me do is, you know, simplify life again. And it doesn't, again, it hasn't been simple. Like there's so much going on, but you know, simplifying where you go, how long you can be gone, all because you have other things that rely on you has been kind of an interesting full circle moment for me the last couple of months. And we got 1 week left and they all go home. And frankly, I'm not sure if I'm ready for that yet. Like as ready as I think that I am for it, like I'm going to cry like a baby 12 times. I'm going to cry like, 11 times. I'm going to cry like a baby.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of weird. Cause you think about, you would have never said that 3 days in at 3 a.m.
Oh, hell no.
You were like,
no,
I can't wait for these guys to go.
Yeah. And I don't, again, it reminds me so much of being a parent, a brand new parent over again, because there's no playbook for it. Like you're just, like they just send you home with these things that you're supposed to keep alive. And like, you just let, well, me, of course, like data and like love and just like hard work are the three things that I rely on for everything in life, and just forward and get the job done.
That's very true. What you just said, that's a really good insight. Cause I agree with all those things for you.
Data, love, and hard work. Yeah. That's
data,
that's,
love, and hard work. Yeah.
And so, you know, for me, it's just kind of reminded me to make life and keep life simple. And I think we need that reminder sometimes. And I never in a million years thought it would come in the form of having 12 puppies, but it really has simplified life again. And again, not made it easy, but it simplified it for sure.
And you know what, I think we talked about this a Friday or two ago, is, you know, what makes it doable is, you know, your passion for what this whole thing was about. It was more than just the puppies. It was a lineage of a couple of dogs that you have. That would, you know, that would go on for years and years and, you know, decades even, maybe, that, you know, these great dogs that will do field trials are great. Some are great pets. Some are, you know, whatever it is, will all come from, you know, this litter. And it's a special litter and it's really cool. And that was your vision for this. And you followed it through. And it's not, and so it's, to most people, it's about puppies and how much you make on it. And I'm going to say this because the puppies have been gone. You've already gotten paid for it, but it's not really not about the money to you, right?
No.
I mean, it is, but it's not. It's about getting your costs covered, but it's not about that.
Yeah. I was unaware of how cost intensive the first litter would be. I generally knew, but like, you know, until you're 10 grand in on sunk costs, like you can't really appreciate what it's like to be 10 grand in. Right. Yeah. And I think the funny thing is for me is that you bring up an interesting point about the stewardship of the breed, right? Like being, you know, there are so many animals in the world that deserve love, that are full, shelters are full, you know, dogs are unfortunately being euthanized every day, but like that doesn't negate the need to carry on lineage and lines of dogs, right? Breeds are, they have a purpose in life, but with that comes the responsibility of stewardship and not breeding good dogs, not breeding average dogs, but breeding great dogs that, that complement, that are compliments and good representatives of the breed, but like are also worthy of replacing that animal that's not going to have a home from a shelter. Right. So, and for me, it's weird because it takes it all the way back to my military days. Like I worked so hard to get to where I was in the Ranger Regiment, and the stewardship that I had of the scroll and of the Ranger tab was at the front of my mind every single day in everything that I did. And I've carried that forward in my life, and I certainly haven't gotten it all right all the time, but it's weird how this type of situation takes me back to my roots of the things that like truly make up who I am as a person.
Yeah, I can see that. And you know, there was something that you texted me one day And I'm like, man, we a lot of times in the podcast, we talk about this, and you and I talk about it all the time, is the way we approach situations are completely different. Like we approach problems completely different. So tell everyone what you did, because you had 12 puppies and a female dog only has 8 teats.
Yeah. Oh, so,
you know, what does that cause? And so kind of tell everybody what you did. And because before you say it, I have to let everybody know, this is pure Davin. Like if you know who Davin is and you've been around him, this is not going to surprise you, but this is you in a nutshell.
I almost want to see if I can like pull this thing up. Yeah. I'm going to see if I can figure out how to do this here in a minute. But again, to your point, 12 dogs, 8 teats on a dog. Like there's a lot of extra things that have to happen. Right. And these animals have to eat every 2 to 3 hours. And their life literally depends on it. And all I could do was just gather as much information as possible, right? Like let the data be the driver of the decisions that you make. Cause again, there's 12 of them. So right. the second we brought them home, we bought a scale, put them on a scale, took weights. Day 1 a.m. becomes a header of the column, and there's 12 dogs. They all have, and we put
this. This is my favorite part, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. We put collar colors on them. And so I color coded the row.
Of course you did.
The row to correspond with the collar color. Right. And right. then number one header, day 1 a.m. weight, boom, put the weight down in grams. And then day 2 p.m. in grams, and then create a little a box down below. Weight percentage gain AM, weight percentage gain PM, right? Because there's supplemental feeding that has to happen with all of this. And
right.
if you are just going by look, by feel, by, you know, like not just relying on your gut, one of the dogs is going to fall behind. So what I would do is like, as the dog's weight fell behind the standard, like the mean or the average, if they fell behind the standard deviation, then I would increase the supplemental feeding, right? And like I had another weight chart or feeding chart that I would track by grams. It calculated the exact amount of cc's of supplemental formula that they had to have. And so this spreadsheet just kept growing and growing and growing. And then of course, like you have to be able to synthesize the information. So then I start throwing in trend lines and spark lines and pivot charts. And like, it ends up in this just like monstrosity of data, but it's all like, it's all conceptualized and visualized too. And it just kept growing and growing. And now one of the favorite things that the buyers of the litter do, I send a weekly update every Thursday. Yeah. I got to send mine tonight. And I take the weekly snapshot, and the snapshot has the weight at the beginning of the week, the weight at the end of the week, the percentage gain. And then I aggregate the information, say, you know, average, median, range, highest gained in weight, highest gained in percentage, lowest gain of weight, lowest gain in percentage. And I take that information and I attach it to the email. And the people buying the puppies love it. They absolutely eat up the information.
I'm sure they because do.
It visualizes, like they can see this dog that they're investing a lot of money into, that it's being taken care of in real time. And the feedback that I've gotten on that spreadsheet has been nuts.
So a couple things. Number one is, if I was buying one of the dogs, I would love it too. Cause it because number one, not probably for the reason you think I would like it. The number, like most people go, oh, but you want to see the data. Listen, you know me, I would never even look at it. All I see is this pretty chart. All I care about is that you care and it matters to you. Right.
Yeah.
And that you're tracking this. And so this is going to make sense to you because you're tracking it. I don't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But tell everyone what you did with all that data when you took the dogs to the vet.
I took them day two, as a matter of fact, and the vet couldn't believe it. They were like, will you send us the spreadsheet? Like, they're like, we don't keep records this detailed. And they wanted the spreadsheet to keep it and to use it. And I'm like, I mean, it's not, oh no. Oh. You guys got me?
I lost you for a minute.
Okay.
Yeah, you're there.
So yeah, like the vet was blown away by it, and they were like, we don't keep, like, who the hell are, I think they said, who are you?
Who the hell are you?
Yeah. Who the hell are you? Yeah. I'm like, just a guy that nerds out on puppy information. I don't know.
You've heard that from me many times when you walked in my office with something. Like, I did all this stuff and I did this, and I'm like, who are you?
I don't even know who you are. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Get out of my office. Bring Davin back.
So, but it, that, it has been like one of the most like just fun journeys that I've had in a while is raising these puppies, and like the sense of responsibility that I feel because of the trust that other people have put in me to like to for these puppies. Like 12 people, 11 people have been like, hey dude, I'm gonna give you a considerable amount of money, and for 8 weeks, like, please keep my dog alive and healthy and train it and, yeah, you know, like get it ready to go. And so like, it really is, it's a pretty tremendous responsibility. And like, I've taken it maybe more seriously than I needed to, but yeah, to the level that nobody, that surprises nobody that knows me.
No, I'm not shocked at all. I'm shocked at what you created, 'cause I've never seen that before, but I mean, on dogs, but still it's pretty amazing. And it's pretty amazing how healthy they are, because nobody has 12 puppies and they all make it.
No, it's even split, six and six, all healthy, no cleft palates, no hernias, no runt, no nothing. And that's, and the crazy range on them for this last week is about 2.5 pounds, really? You know, for the biggest male to the smallest female, yeah, which is still pretty tremendous. And, you know, it's, yeah, it's in the smallest one, and it's the one going to Zach and Monica. She is really just this badass little dog. Yeah. And a retrieving just machine, like, and is afraid of nobody. Like the biggest male, she body slams him on a regular basis, and she tackles it. Dolly, and like, they are getting an absolute spitfire of a little dog. That, and on the other end of that is that dog has no idea that it's going to live a life better than most humans get.
Dude, no doubt. I mean, it you might as well ship this dog to Martha Stewart, because that's what he's
seriously
doing.
Yeah,
I mean, literally, that's who she is. She's Martha Stewart.
So yeah, I'm excited across the board. And last thing I'll say is, like, I think the quality of the litter is represented in the quality of the buyers. And we have some like cornerstone Chesapeake breeders. Like one person is getting their first, they've been breeding dogs for 30 something years, and they're getting one from this litter, and it's the first dog they're getting that they haven't bred in 24 years.
That's crazy.
So, you know, again, the quality of the buyer just shows the quality of the breeding that we've done and the marketing that we've done. And just like, I don't know, it's coming to an end, but, and I don't know, I honestly don't know if I'll ever do it again. Yeah. I feel like we put lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I could endure the heartbreak of like losing a puppy or two in the process, yeah, which is super common. Yeah. Like that's something that I can't even wrap my brain around.
Yeah. Something else that's kind of cool, and this kind of goes back to you, is that you have not, I think the question I ask you is, so, you know, when do people get to pick? And you're like, they don't get to. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you talking about? So tell people about that, because that's, to me, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Everybody's familiar with this like concept of pick of the litter. Like I get first, I paid the most money, whatever. I know you the most, like I get pick of the litter. And I think that's such a wild concept, because if you breed two quality dogs, the litter shouldn't have a whole lot of variance between the best and the worst, right? And yeah, just because somebody put down a deposit first and they happen to want a pet. And so the dog that I determine in my brain is the best dog, is the pick of the litter, is high energy, high drive, high prey instinct, like it needs to be on a trainer's truck, like is a retrieving machine that's going to go on to do excellent things in the field trial world and in the hunting blind. If I give that dog to a person that wants a pet, I've now done a disservice to the family, and I've done a disservice to the dog. So
yeah, for sure,
just because the order that you happen to put a deposit down in doesn't mean that you're going to get the number one dog. You're going to get the number one dog for your family, and you're going to get the number one dog for your lifestyle. Yeah. And they're all going to be healthy, and they're all going to be genetically tested, and they're all going to be well-tempered. They're all going to be the things that you need it to be. And I'm never going to guarantee a color. And I analyze them as we go. Like there's water, there's birds, there's gunshots, there's putting them upside down on their back, there's watching them interact with their litter mates. There's 1,000 different things that I get to see all day long for 8 weeks. And I'm assessing these dogs as they go. And I know all of the buyers. I know, do they want to hunt? Do they want a hunting dog? Do they want a pet? Do they want a hunt test dog? Do they want a field trial dog? And as I analyze their personalities, I've now matched up every dog to the lifestyle of the family that wants them. And I told them all last weekend the dog that they're getting. And before that, like, I'm willing to take input. Like, you can tell me if you want a specific color, but that doesn't mean you're going to get that color. You can say you want a specific dog, but just because your eye catches that dog doesn't mean it's the best dog for your family.
Well, especially if you're going to hunt with it or trial the dog, they don't care what color the dog is. Mm-mm.
And I had one guy, he was a little bit hung up on the color. And my final response to him was like, look, dude, like, then walk away. I've got five people behind you that are willing to take this dog. Like, just because you wanted a darker color dog and she happens to have lighter fur, like, this is the exact
dog. And it's okay. If you want to walk away, it's okay.
Yeah. I'm not mad at you. I'm not getting your deposit back, but I'm not mad at you.
Right.
So, yeah. So, you know, again, by Monday, we'll have five gone by Monday. And then it'll kind of trickle their way out next week. And then we're keeping one for a little bit longer for a guy who's doing some traveling out of the country. And then when he gets back, he'll drive in from Louisiana and pick up a teal.
That's so cool. So how did everybody react when you told them what dogs they're getting, for the most part?
Everybody was over the moon about it. You know, honestly, the ones that were the least fussy were the people that were breeders themselves or highly competitive, like hunt test people or field trial people. Like, I built a rapport with them and they trusted my decision. And so I didn't, other than that one person who finally came around the next day, everybody was just over the moon because they knew that they were there regardless of the color or the size, they're getting a dog that's going to be hopefully perfect for them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so cool. Well, man, congratulations on that. Congratulations on raising some great dogs. That's a big deal. Cool. Thanks for sharing that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I feel like I took up a whole lot of time talking about dogs.
No, it's okay.
What did you learn other than I'm a crazy psychopath about dogs?
I learned that that you should not go into the dog breeding business. Hmm. That I'm glad you did it, but it's not, you take it way too personal, right?
You
take it way too personal. And that's okay. But if you're breeding dogs, even if it's one litter a year, you can't do that, right? You can't. Because I would be the same way you are. And Jamie couldn't do it just because you're sending it home to a place that, is this dog really going to be loved? Is you really going to take care of this dog? Like, we're considering taking a dog in that is being rehomed because the family basically decided they can't pay enough attention to the dog.
Yeah.
And I get it. And I'm glad that they at least are that aware that they're not just throwing the dog in the backyard and not paying attention to it. But still, you know, it's just hard.
That's why I bet you I said no to 20 people, and really very little exaggeration in that statement, like just getting to know them. And I had one guy be like, you know, are they going to be mean enough? And I'm like, nah, like my dogs,
really?
I can promise you, dude. Well, cause you know, Chesapeake's can be a little bit surly. You know, they're old school hunting dogs.
Yeah, sure they are.
You know, he's like, I want somebody a dog that'll bite somebody if they need to. And I'm like, look, dude, like
what?
If you knew my dogs, like I can promise you they're not for you. So thanks, but no thanks.
How about I'll bite you?
Yeah, I'll bite you. And you know, and the other thing about this is that it's written into the contract that I have with all the buyers. Like if they want to get rid of the dog, it comes back to me. And I'll work to rehome the dog. Yeah, like it's a breach of contract to sell that dog to somebody else that I don't know or that I don't approve of, or put the dog in a shelter.
Dude, I love that. That's awesome.
Yep. It's a lifelong commitment, man.
Good for you. Good for you. Well, so what I've learned, I've been able to sit and read quite a bit, and I listen to podcasts every day because, as you well know, that Oliver has to get 10,000 steps every day, mm-hmm. or I'm not allowed back in the house because he has to keep his step goal record going. I think we're at 152 days now. So my job every day is to take Oliver for a walk. So we walk anywhere from 2 to 2.5 miles every day. And so when we're walking, that's kind of when I listen to podcasts and whatever, right? So you learn a ton. Like when you walk that much and 45 minutes of podcast a day, an hour of podcast a day, you pick up some things. Mm-hmm. And so the other day, it was several weeks ago, I was listening to one, and of all things, it was a Jewish rabbi out of Los Angeles. And he was talking about families. He was talking about things that people deal with. And kind of the main topic was, a lot of it was about death, which was kind of interesting, him talking about that. But kind of a sidebar discussion he had was talking about adversity and how when you deal with things, and in this you were talking about dealing with loss, or you were talking about dealing with just like really difficult things. Like you've got a hardship in your life. And, you know, so many times something hits us in the face, and it's going to, because life's all about ups and downs, is our first thought is, man, I don't know if I can deal with this. And he said he counsels people all the time. And so his answer was really cool and it stuck with me. And I've been thinking a lot about it. And he's like, here's the thing. You know what's going to get you through this? And they're like, no. And he's like, the same thing that got you through the last time, got through it the last time you dealt with something. And I'm like, okay, that's pretty good. Like that's, and so it stuck with me. The more I thought about it, it really goes back to a lot of what you and I talk about on the podcast and what we talk about in life. And that's, you know, how everything is about mindset and how you deal with things and how you perceive things. And then how you wrap your head around that situation, good or bad. And what do you do with it at that point? And I thought that was really, really good of, you know, going through when you hit a hardship, you deal something with something really difficult and you're like, man, I just don't know how in the world. I'm, know that it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt for a while and it's going to suck and you're going to deal with stuff. But here's the thing. It's probably something you've never dealt with before, but you're going to handle it the same way you handle everything else you've always dealt with. And you're going to get through it and you're, one day you're going to feel better, you know? And it's it, one of the things I'll say to something, somebody else, and they're talking about the first time a girl breaks up with you or a guy breaks up with you or whatever the case might be. And the first one, you're like, I'll never love anybody again. This is awful. My heart's going to hurt the rest of my life. And a month or two later, you kind of wake up one day and it doesn't feel as bad. And then 2-3 months later, I don't feel much of it at all. And then 6 months later, you're like, yeah, I'm good. And then the second time it happens, it still hurts, but it only hurts for like 3 months.
Yeah.
And then the third time it only hurts for like 3 weeks. And you think about that. It's like, did you love that person any less? Probably not. But you learn that you're going to get over it, right? You're going to eventually feel better and you're going to be able to process it. And you've learned how to process it. And anything that you deal with the first time is going to be difficult. The second time, a little bit easier. Third time, a little bit easier. But at the end, know that we all work it out, get through it. Yeah. You know, and you I and like I have discussed, I'm kind of going through some stuff right now. It's not nothing, once again, not end of the world stuff, but it sucks, right? Lose some sleep over it. But, you know, I have to go back to, man, I've dealt with stuff before and I'll get through it. It's just a matter of strategizing how I get through it and how do I deal with it and what's the best channel or what's the best road to go down, but knowing that it, I'm going to get through it. And so it gives it, if nothing else, it's something that you and I talk about a lot. It gives us confidence to know that at the end, we're going to make it through it, whether it's a problem, an issue, even something good. Hey, great. Something great happened. You know what? That's awesome. It's, I'm not going to feel like this forever. And it's going to get better or it's going to get worse or I'm going to lose this feeling. And then what's next?
You know, for me, with the relationship thing, I found what really helped was three marriages.
did it? Is that
just lots of practice. No, but
so
but,
if I seriously. If I were to ask you, like, why, like your marriage right now, how, why is it working? Your answer would be, because I've, you know, I've been through two already, Tim.
Total exhaustion. I don't know. What do you want from me? Total exhaustion. no, so you bring up an interesting point, and I agree with everything that you're saying. But there's also value in the struggle to feeling the pain and feeling the hurt of the struggle, right?
Yeah. Like,
and I know this from firsthand experience. Like, if you just focus on getting through it, right? Like,
yeah.
You get to the other side, and I think you're more likely to repeat the same mistake, right? And mm-hmm. I agree that you have to walk a straight line. You have to go down the path. And you actually are the one that told me this. You're like, dude, there are no shortcuts for what you're going through. Like, you just got to get through it. Right.
Yeah.
But there's also, I think, a lot of value in what got you to it and what, not just what will get you through it, but what got you there and mm-hmm. what you can do to prevent it from happening, but also the growth that you feel when you're in the middle of the hurt.
Right.
Right. There's a lot of growth in those moments. And so, I agree. I just think there's a balance of just plowing through it versus synthesizing and taking in and reflecting on the situation and how you can get and how you can do it better next time, or how maybe you can even avoid it next time.
Right.
And well, and try to grow from it.
Yeah. And I think that's why the second time it's easier, because mm-hmm. the first time you learned how to process this stuff. and you learned what you need to go through and what to take away. It's like, you know, when we deal with really tough stuff, and we talk about this, is there's two ways you can deal with it. One is you can just wallow. And the other one is, okay, this really sucks, and I'm going to think through, what am I going to learn from this? You know, it's kind of like, you know, people, when we're in the middle of a pandemic, is, you know, and our country hasn't done a very good job of this, is, you know, the worst thing that can happen through a pandemic is at the end of it, not learn from it. And it's the same thing when something happens to us. The worst thing that can happen is we don't learn from it. Is, man, don't ever cheat adversity. Let adversity be adversity, because we'll never become wiser and experienced unless we go through that and learn from it. The worst thing that can happen is we don't learn from something, from adversity. That's the worst thing that can happen. You know, we all want to stay away from adversity, but the reality is unless you go through it, man, you're not going to learn. You're not going to be wise.
And what I tend to do, which I would argue is as bad as wallowing in it, is throw it on your shoulders, put blinders on, drown yourself in other things, and just plow straight ahead like a pack mule.
Yeah.
And like, I've lived my life that way a lot. And that is trying to shortcut adversity as much as not facing it or wallowing in it. Like, because you're not trying to understand it. You're not trying to feel it. You're not trying to do anything but get to the other side of it. So you can drop the heavy load and get on with your life.
You're shortcutting it. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is you're taking it on, but you're shortcutting it.
Yep. And just plowing through it. And that has been one of my biggest weaknesses in life, is just plowing through it and just trying to my best to get through the adversity.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, I've seen, just knowing you in the last, 6 years or so, I've known you longer than that, but just knowing you more closely, working with you every day, you know, you've changed a lot over those years of how you see things. You know, it's pretty impressive. And you and I talk about this quite a bit, but it's pretty impressive to see how you balance that tough Army Ranger and the heart that you have, and learning how to balance those two and to think through what's best for me and my family and those around me as I go through this, and what can I just not only learn for myself, but what can I use this for and teach those around me so that when they go through it, they deal with it in a way that's positive too, right? That they take something from it too. And so much of that is, as I've gotten older, it's the stories that we're able to tell. Is when someone's going through that, man, it's one thing for you to tell somebody what they should do, but the reality is, man, nobody's going to soak that in. But if you tell a story of, let me tell you a story about what happened to me one time. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you some things I did that were probably not the right way to do it. And here's what I learned from that. And here's what my takeaway is. So do with it what you want, but consider this, right? Consider thinking about it this way. And once again, you're not giving somebody a step 1, 2, 3 of what to do, but you're opening a section of their brain to be able to go down another avenue with this thought that will take them to something, not necessarily just positive, but something that will stay with them the rest of their life, experience some wisdom that they'll be able to use the rest of their life and be able to tell someone else that story. Right.
Yeah. And it's either, I mean, I think avoid the do this and this and this. And for me, like if I'm in that kind of situation, it's like, hey, dude, here's what I did. And you probably shouldn't do this and this and this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then let them figure it out on their own.
Yeah. And you know, it's like our kids. I would never, you know, and some parents, they try to channel their kids so tight and keep so many boundaries on them that they never let their kids fail. Mm. And so the kids wind up failing on their own when you're not around. And that's when they go off the deep end. Who was the guy who was the, I think he was a college football player that went to NFL. He had never had sugar in his life. He had never had alcohol in his life. His parents had focused him so narrowly on being an NFL quarterback. And then when he got to college, after the first year or two, like he went crazy, like off the deep end. And I think he never even went to the NFL or something, but like I think he wound up in prison.
Was it Ryan Leaf?
I think it was Ryan Leaf. Yeah. If you go back and read that story, it's crazy.
No sugar, no alcohol. Like those are the,
he had never had sugar in his life until
Those are two of the major food groups. Bacon, sugar.
I mean, sugar is the baseline, right? I mean, for what we do, bacon, it's like sugar, the alcohol. Food pyramid. Like,
what else is there?
You know, especially the bacon, if it's cured in sugar, you know, yeah. that's what's really special.
And then served in a Bloody Mary. The Holy Trinity, as some would call it.
Which is great if there's one, but I think maybe he went with five, but just saying. Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right. So maybe we've been going for a while. So maybe this is a good place to wrap up for our, hey, we've gone, gosh, probably 40. Now that I can see it on the screen now, we've been like 45 minutes almost. So
yeah, Sophie, we've been so reliant on Sophie doing this, giving us the 5-minute warning.
I know.
We typically ignore.
So we'll just let this be as it is. How's that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. All right. Hey, enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a fun one. Till next time.
All right. See you.